Microphone check. Does my mic sound nice? Yes, it does. Welcome to this week's episode of It's About Damn Time. We focus on the real journey to being 1% better every damn day. Welcome to this week's episode of It's About Damn Time. I am Jared Damn, back in the building once again. And if you're new here, let me break down exactly what we're doing here. It's About Damn Time is a podcast about self-discovery. It's my self-journey. I'm on a road to build a better me. And hopefully through my conversations and revelations, I'm taking you along the way so you can build a better you. Because, you know, we in this together. It's a community type of thing. So, y'all, it's about damn time that we actually talk about attachment styles. It's something that I think is really important into getting a better understanding of relationships overall. So I decided to do a little bit of research. I went to ChatGPT. I went to Google's Gemini. I was Googling this stuff. I was like, yeah, I'm about to do an episode on this. I'm about to kill it, right? And so I looked at all the information, and I sat there, and I was just like, shit, I'm gonna need some help. I don't think I'm gonna be able to do this on my own. So I said, all right, let me think. Who can help me? Probably have to be like somebody that is a licensed clinical psychologist off the rip. And it probably had to be somebody who you know, teaches at Harvard. You know, like you need somebody like super smart. You know what I mean? And then I was like, all right, who do I know that probably specializes in helping with African-American people, you know, and their issues and everything, and also is doing research on not only women's mental health, but also relationships, because that's what all I need for attachment styles, to direct how I'm rolling and how I'm navigating. So I was like, who do I know in this space? Dr. Janice Moody. So thank you for coming. Hey.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be able to have a conversation. I am. And I'm going to try not to be too academic. It can be some information that people can really use in having a better understanding of how to show up in relationships so you can get your needs met.
Hey, you don't have to worry about being too academic, because I'm going to dumb it down so it'll be a balance. You ain't got to worry about it, because you get a little too, for me, I'll be like, hey, what that mean? Look, I go way back with Dr. Moody. I adore her. Like, you know, I wanted to have her on to sit there and talk about how the fact that she saved my life a few years back. It's probably a different conversation for a different time, mm-hmm. but I can't wait to have that one as well.
Okay.
So that means you're earmarked to come back. So mm-hmm. I love it. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Moody, break it down for me though. Like, attachment styles, because there's a lot of content out there for people trying to explain it to me, but I need somebody smart to break this down for me. What are attachment styles, and where do your attachment styles come from?
Okay, well, first of all, attachment styles are the patterns or the ways in which we attach to people in relationships, right? And that is whether it's intimate relationships or not, but it's mostly about close relationships is the stuff that we pay attention to, and how they form essentially is based on what your relationships look like with your parents or caregivers, right? So, for example, if your experience of your parents, and like you think about it, when we're very little and like hyper independent on our parents, you can't do anything by yourself. What you come to expect from the world and people that you are connected to is based on the way your parents responded to your needs. So that's how your attachment stuff plays itself out in relationships. And so the thing is, those things, it becomes like an inner working model. It helps us to shape what our expectations are of people, and subsequently kind of how we deal with people based on how we expect them to show up. And so the thing is, they impact more specifically our intimate relationships, because those are the relationships where in which you think we have like the most emotionally close bonds. So you know how it is when people you don't really care about do stuff to you, be like, oh, okay, they might've got on my nerves, but they ain't that big a deal. But the people the closest to you are the ones who can hurt you the most. So the way our attachment styles show up in those intimate relationships when we haven't had the most secure experiences in our caregiving, or they weren't consistent and loving, then we expect our partners to show up in the same way. And subsequently, we will do what we unconsciously learned how to do before and either respond in a way that'll keep us from being harmed or we'll run. And the thing is, it's like, you might not even have a reason to do that in a relationship that you're in, but it's based on what your initial experience was.
Gotcha. So I already had questions on that. So so one, you cleared up one for me because I thought this might be a way to navigate, like, you know, if my boss is acting funny, let me figure out what their attachment style is. But no, it's intimate relationships. All right, which makes a lot of sense because you had that intimate relationship with that parent or caregiver. I guess the second thing is it strictly that caregiver that's in the house? So, like, let's say, you know, just use me for example. Just use me, right? All right. So mom was there, grandma was there, dad was out of the house, and I, you know, maybe see him on weekends if he had time for me. You know, so would my attachment style be like created from the interactions with my mom and my grandma, or would my dad play a part in that as well?
It's from the people that you get the most, who have the most responsibility in your caregiving, because it's primarily based on who you depend on for your needs the most. So if it's mostly, you know, if your mom was in the house, but your grandmother kind of took the role of the majority of what was happening. Say, for example, like you have kids who, okay, well, the mom and the grandma might have been in the household, but the mom might be working 24/7. But the grandmother might be the person who woke you up in the morning, made you breakfast for school, got you together, got you out of the house to school. And then when you come home, you know, might be helping you to get the rest of your stuff together for the next day because mom is working. Then that could have a significant impact if your grandmother is your primary caregiver. Your mama might be in the house, but whoever is basically takes responsibility of attending to the majority of your needs, that is what shapes it the most. Not that those other people can't have an impact on it, but the primary caregiver is the person who's going to shape it the most. And if that's both of your parents, you know, sometimes it can strike a balance, but that determines whether or not your needs are being met. Then that'll help determine whether or not your expectation is that your needs will get met in the rest of the world. And when you attach yourself to somebody in a close relationship, and again, it don't have to necessarily be a romantic relationship. It could even be in your like friendships, because there are friendships that people can have that when people kind of separate, folks might have a really serious emotional reaction to it, like a romantic breakup, if somebody was that close to. So it helps us to understand what our expectations are from the people that we attach ourselves to. And it can be it's generally from the primary person.
Okay. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm glad you, that was one of my other questions was could it be like intimate, like as far as like friendships as well? So that makes a lot of sense. So let's break this down. Cause it's, what are these styles? So it's like, I thought it was four, but then when we were sitting there talking before, you had named like 14 of them. So I don't know how many there are. So I'm gonna ask the smart person in the room, the one that got a doctor title in their name, to tell me how many styles are there and what are they exactly?
Okay, all right. So there are two major groups. The first group would be secure attachment. And people who have secure attachment essentially got their needs met when they were little. So they had the expectation that the world was going to give them what they needed. And so they tend to have a positive perception of themselves and of other people or their partner. And they don't get anxious when things don't happen like they need them to happen right off, or when they're better able to communicate what their feelings are. They can talk through conflicts. They are able to regulate their emotions, and they don't have concerns about the stability of those particular relationships. So they can they're better set up to handle the highs and the lows because their needs were met when they were younger. So these are the kind of people who show up in relationships and they're more stable, they're more communicative, they don't tend to blow up, they don't tend to run when things get difficult. They can manage the storms because their needs were met before. So they feel they kind of have like a more stable internal kind of compass thing, so to speak.
Do these people exist at all? Because I don't know nobody like this.
Yes, there are. I don't know them like that. I don't know them people like that. But there
like
are
the fairy
some
tales.
Who are. Yeah, okay. Yeah. There are some people who are, but the asterisk for that is people's attachment styles can change based on their relationship experience. That's another conversation.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about that in a second.
Yeah,
okay.
We'll talk about that in a second. The other one there, the other group is the insecure attachment styles. And there's a subgroup of like three or four of them. Don't make me, because I remember initially there were two. And there is anxious avoidant, or it's three. Anxious avoidant, fearful avoidant, and dismissive avoidant attachment styles. And how they come about is when either a child's needs are not met, or they are neglected, or the needs are inconsistently met, or there is perhaps some kind of trauma. And of course, you can imagine that, you know, okay, well, you didn't get what you needed, or even your emotional stuff was not attended to when you were younger. Then again, it kind of sets you up for what you expect the world to be like as you get older. So for the anxious attachment folks, the anxious attachment people are the ones whose experiences of the caregivers were such that their needs may have been met sometimes, and then sometimes they may not have been. So they kind of don't know what to expect. And they tend to have a negative perception of themselves and a positive perception of their partner. And they show up in a very clingy way, like consistently needing reassurance. And they can kind of be codependent, because the expectation is that at some point they feel like they might be abandoned.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes your needs are met, sometimes they're not. So you think about what that might be like in a relationship where there's nothing to really indicate that you should be scared I'm gonna leave you. But if that is your internal working model, then you might be extra super, super clingy. And for somebody who is showing up in a reasonable way, that could push them off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've dealt with people that have done that and pushed me off.
Yeah. Yeah. That could push people off, because you need reassurance. It's like, but there's nothing to indicate I'm going nowhere. Why do you feel like what we have is unstable, or that I'm going to pull away from you? It's that abandonment stuff. Then we have the fearful avoidant. Now, the fearful avoidant attachment style, they have a negative view of themselves and of their partner. And these particular folks have generally had some sort of trauma or some kind of abuse in their caregiving. And their expectation largely is that they're going to be hurt. Now, they desire closeness, but they kind of show up in relationship where it's like they'll tiptoe toward intimacy, but then they're triggered and they'll pull back or be ambivalent. Like it's a push-pull kind of thing, because especially if you were abused within the context of a caregiving relationship, then the people you cared about were the ones who abused you. They're responsible for the hurt. So it's a push-pull, because you kind of don't necessarily know what to expect or when, but you do know that, okay, I'm more likely to be hurt in the context of closeness as opposed to not. So they are the, I want to be close, but no, wait, hold up. I'm scared. I'm pull back and come sit over here. So sometimes when we see people in relationships who they might be, everything is all lovely one day, and then they get scared, and then all of a sudden they pull all the way back and might not communicate that to your partner. Partner don't know what's going on. Like, what happened? What happened? And again, it don't have to have nothing to do with what's going on in the relationship with other person, but it's again your internal working model. And so,
they could just be thinking about something and just spiral, and then all of a sudden the partner just get the end result of it. Like, I don't know what happened.
Yeah. And the thing is, there can be something that can trigger a trauma response.
Right.
And the partner not have any idea what that was. And guess what? Sadly, a lot of people don't know what their own trauma responses are.
Yeah.
They don't know. It's like, you know, they something will click, something will happen, and it'll create like an anxiety or something and make you feel like you got to run. And their interpretation of whatever that is, sometimes to hear it is like, wait, where you got that from? Who make me understand how you thought that. Because whatever it is that they thought generally informed what they were feeling, where the fear came from. And, you know, they ghost, they out of here. They're trying to run to avoid what they anticipate is going to be hurtful. So, yeah, the fearful people, they kind of push pull when they feel like perhaps sometimes they get in a position where they're far enough a way to feel safe, but then still close enough to kind of engage on some level, then they might show up and kind of creep back. But if that, if you got another trauma response or something indicates that you might be hurt, then they might be right back out the door.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Now, with the dismissive avoidant attachment style is, it develops when caregivers were not nurturing and they basically didn't really attend to a lot of what those particular needs were. So in response to that, these particular folks tend to be really super hyper independent, and it makes it difficult for them to be able to rely on people. They have a positive perception of themselves, but more of a negative perception on their partners because they didn't get their needs met. It wasn't even that it was inconsistent. It was, they just didn't get it. So they become hyper reliant and they have a tendency to desire on some level closeness, but as soon as there is something, there is conflict, or there is something to suggest that something is awry with the relationship, then they too will run. They too will run. They will run. They have a difficult time being able to express emotions. They have a difficult time being able to read the emotions or be able to identify, recognize the needs of their partner. So they have a difficult time being able to tolerate the intimacy. And when problems or conflict arise during arguments or whatever, then they check out. They'll check out. So it's interesting how it's similar in terms of what happens with the fearful anxious avoidant. But the reality is that when it comes down to it, they're colder when it comes down to actually being able to acknowledge the desire for intimacy, for closeness, for partnership. You know, I'm good. Don't want to rely on anybody else. So they're super hyper self-reliant, super independent. Don't want to be, you know, dependent on anybody else for anything else.
All right. Yeah. So you, first of all, thank you for breaking that down. Cause not only did you give me the types, you gave me what it looks like, mm-hmm. what the parent style problem. I needed all that. I needed all that. But as you gave it to me, I'm sitting there listening, I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, okay, all right, so I'm definitely like, you know, the first one of the mm-hmm. insecure one. Mm-hmm. And these started naming some of the fearful one. I'm like, ooh, I know some people that's like that. And I'm like, wait, I might be kind of like that a little bit too. And then mm-hmm. and then you get to dismiss it. I'm like, I think I used to be like this. So I was like, how do you figure out what style you are? Because I was like, I saw Jared in all of them except the secure one.
Everything, all things insecure. So
all things.
When it comes down to it, you can have a degree of some. Most have a primary, but you know, again, depending on what your relationship patterns look like later on in life, then you can develop certain expectations, you know. So there are assessments that you can take. A lot of times when we do assessments, of course, when we're working with people, especially with couples, trying to figure out what your expectations are and what your expectations and kind of how you're operating. But if I'm not mistaken, there might be some online, you know, they have quizzes and stuff like that. You can find out what your love language is and all the rest of that kind of stuff. Taking quizzes online, but I would also be looking to see if whether or not it might be a credible source. Because sometimes it just be random, you know, raggedy stuff. But there are some psychological organizations and stuff like that put out quizzes and those kind of mini assessments for lay people. So you can kind of get a sense of where you're operating from.
All right. So I'm going to definitely do some research and then I'll mm-hmm. put that in the show notes. So when people listen, they're like, oh, I need to know the credible ones. You don't want the raggedy ones, as Dr. Booty said. Right. You don't want that raggedy shit. You know, you want that weird shit.
Don't come over here with these raggedy attachment styles. I don't know. What is it? What are you talking about? Yeah. You don't want all of that.
I love it. So, okay. So I'll put that in the show notes. I'll do my due diligence there. But mm-hmm. all right. So let's say you have already identified your style. So I think probably for the most part, I probably identify with let me make sure I got it right. The anxious what was the first one?
Anxious avoidant.
anxious avoidance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think I identify mostly with that one. So if I know that I'm an anxious avoidant and I'm just mm-hmm. like, all right, I'm out here trying to find some love. I'm trying to do my thing. I'm trying to be present in the moment with mm-hmm. and have some romance going on right now, some mm-hmm. intimacy. Mm-hmm. How do I navigate that? If they ain't secure, because mm-hmm. one, if they ain't secure, then now I got to not only police my emotions, but I got to sit there and worry about how they interact with things. Mm-hmm. And is there like a matchup that's preferable? Is it like the zodiac sign where I can just match up with a Taurus and Virgo kind of link up better than, how would that work?
You know what? I have not looked at matchups because essentially here's a difficult thing. When people are unaware of how they're showing up, you trying to tell them or trying to navigate their stuff is generally not going to work, because it to them, the way that they interpret stuff for them is real. Like, you can't tell me that you doing this does not mean you getting ready to leave. Like, no, that's not what I'm... You can say what you want to say, but if that's what they believe and they have no idea, that might be a distortion, perhaps, kind of rooted in some other stuff, then you're not likely to be able to convince them of those particular things. So for people who lack self-awareness for real, then it might be a challenge trying to manage somebody else's stuff. But people can learn about those things. Like I said, you know, you can do a mini assessment, but I always recommend, you know, and it's not just because I'm a psychologist, but I recommend when people go to therapy, period, to get some insight on who they are and how they operate. Like, why do you move like you move? And to step back and pay closer attention to the outcomes that you helped to create in your life. Why you thinking everybody else is responsible for what your problems are? What is your role mm-hmm. in creating and sustaining your problems? So if you know that you have an anxious avoidance style, now how that's going to show up in a relationship, like we talked about, is going to help you to determine what you expect from people and how you interpret people's behaviors, how they show up for you, right? So say, for example, in this world of now extra super technology, if your pattern is that you and your partner text good morning and, you know, text and communicate via text throughout the course of the day, and in the evening, you know, y'all at least, you know, text before you go to bed, and maybe your partner is gone or something, let's say on vacation or something, going to a girls' weekend. Your partner leaves, you don't hear from your partner that night, you don't hear from your partner that morning. Then the wheels start spinning, and how you interpret about why you haven't heard from your partner may well include what your expectation is for the people that you want to be loved by. You want to meet your needs. And that could look like you get anxious and start thinking, oh, well, what's she doing? Is she about to leave? Does she have interest in somebody else? The other difficult part of that is, a lot of times we don't communicate those things. We don't inquire, but we make assumptions and we respond to the assumptions, which often create new problems.
Dr. Moody, come on now. You talking that talk right now.
I'm just saying.
So you talking that talk right now. When I tell you, you know, a lot of times in relationships in the past, even talking to some of my friends, mm-hmm. And loved ones where they're navigating the relationships, that I know one person in particular that always calls me up and tells me about, you know, whatever's going on with her and who mm-hmm. she's dating and everything, right? I was going to say it's my ex-wife because I want you to know that, because we friends now, so we cool. She tells me about it all the time. She'll listen to the podcast, so it's all good. So she'll call me up and she'll tell me about some of the stuff that's going on with her. And then the first thing is an assumption. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I think because they're doing this and this is what they're doing. I'm like, where did that come from? Like, mm-hmm. did they say that? Mm-hmm. No, but it's because of this and this and this. And I'm not just putting her on the spot per mm-hmm. se, because a lot of us do that. A lot yep. of us do there mentally make those assumptions and then mm-hmm. just be like, and then you just go and march down the field. You ain't had that conversation with nobody. You ain't brought it up. You're like, I ain't gotta bring it up because they did this, and they did this, and that means that that's what's going on. You'd be like,
yes, but absolutely.
I didn't know what was going on. Like, you had a whole argument with yourself, and I didn't even know nothing about it, and I lost.
Yeah.
How did I lose? And I wasn't even part of it. That's really how that works.
That's how it happens. And I can't tell you how many times, especially in couples work, oh, well, he did this because such and such, la-da-da, thus and so. How you know? Well, I feel like, first of all, your feelings could be lying sometimes. Sometimes your feelings could be lying. So you have to, A, understand and recognize that when you've decided on something being real, when you ain't looked at the objective reality. Where's the facts? You got the receipts for that? Did you ask him? No, but I feel like no, and because I know. And it's like, okay, so you can do that and then respond to them in a way that is based on what you think. He did this. A lot of times people respond with the, oh, okay, watch this. And so the other person gets whatever the punishment is, and they don't know what the other punishment is. Like, what is you, where you even got that from? Oh, I know you don't have. So the conversation about what you thought initially and where you got it from doesn't get addressed because you'd have created a new problem. And now we over here dealing with the problem and the idea of being able to communicate what you think you know never even occurs to the people. It never even occurred. Right. No, because I know what's going on. I know why he did that. I know what that was for. This what that meant. Maybe not. It's possible that it's
possible.
Not. Yeah, it's possible that it's not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
All right. So, all right, Dr. Mood, I get the whole thing, like the assumptions and everything. So I'm guilty of it. I've been punished. I have been the punisher. I'm gonna be real. I'm gonna keep it real. That's what I do. So, how can we avoid that, regardless of the attachment style in general? How can we avoid those assumptions? Because I know it's based apparently on your particular attachment style. So, how do we fix that and avoid all of that, all those shenanigans?
The thing is, you really have to dig into all of the facts, like for real, for real. And a lot of times our assumptions are as hard as they are because some of them tend to be triggered by our feelings, like what you think is going on, why, what would be the reasons for that? And again, we talk about the attachment styles, how they set up your expectations. So what we tend to do is we negate the other possibilities. If we think, oh, this is what this is, then we generally decide. And I say, like, well, did you have a conversation with, like, the committee in your brain? Because nobody else out here is, that's not consistent with anything else we believe. And people get bent and hooked on it and completely negate any of the additional information. Like, use the data to ask the questions. So when it comes down to asking somebody, so, like, how did you get to that? It's not in the interest of challenging whatever they think they know, but it's really about encouraging people to take a step back and really look at the possibilities. If you just examine the data, then it could help you to perhaps entertain a different understanding of what the circumstances are or why. And if you have somebody who is, I'm gonna say, stable enough, who you can have a conversation about the potential new problems you create with making assumptions, then, you know, they might be more open to considering, oh, okay, well, maybe it's not this, maybe it wasn't that, as opposed to after the fact, you know, done something stupid and created new problems in your relationship. Now it's, oh, my bad, I didn't know. You had the opportunity to find out before you assumed and created new problems. So take advantage of that. Yeah. But it's a matter of being real, gingerly and soft about approaching people with those kind of things, again, because of the emotion that tends to be involved with them. And, you know, if you have friends, if folks have friends that can help you to talk you off the ledge before you do something to destroy something that you actually care about, then that's a good thing. Because sometimes it's harder to hear that from the partner that you're making the assumptions about.
Yo, okay. I'm so glad you said that. So, I'm so glad you said that because in the past, I have dealt with individuals that probably made those assumptions based upon no facts, didn't decide to have a communication with me and everything about it. But then the other caveat is like it's like you said. So you're not doing that work to sit there and you have the ability to ask those questions to get the knowledge to figure that stuff out and not make the assumptions. But the other part of it is though that friend group. So when it comes to that support system, you don't have it because you're not talking either. You don't have the friends or you don't talk to your friends about your relationship, which I can see why you would not do that. But you got to have some people that you trust that you can sit there and talk to. Mm-hmm. And the problem is when it's all in your head and you do that, no one's there to talk you off the ledge. It's like, and like you said, I'm the enemy in your story. So you can't talk to one person that you could talk to. You can't talk to me. And so I'm like basically begging you, like, please go out with your friends. Please fly to Vegas and have a girl's night with your friends. I might be rejected from a previous relationship, but please do that. I told you, she'll listen to podcasts anyway. So please do that. Please do that and everything. And then, but because you don't, everything's in your head. So how important is a secure support group in helping you navigate those things?
Very. And I have a caveat for that. It is a good thing to have somebody who can be an objective sounding board and who is a cheerleader for your relationship, not just for you, because some people have friends. If they hear something, then they can go off the rails about what it was, and it just ends up being an echo chamber of the foolishness, and they reinforce the foolishness. Girl, if I was you, I would such, such, and I was like, Lord Jesus, they're getting ready to make the circumstances worse. It's also good to have, like, mentors who have the kind of relationship that you want. Like, if you want to play basketball like LeBron, you're not going to pattern yourself after emulate people who got the same issues you got.
Right.
You're not getting ready to go train with them because they can't teach you anything. If you want to play like LeBron, then you need to be engaged or paying attention to what LeBron is doing. And so older people who are where you would like to end up, they can give you some wisdom about how to get there, how to check yourself, how to be able to apologize, you know, and what the things you need to be paying attention to in order for you to be able to build or create what it is that you want. Because sometimes people's friends don't necessarily have the vision. Some people are bitter. Some people can't relate. You know, some people think everything is black and white. Some people get mad the first time, you know, there's a conflict in your friend relationship. And then when your friend get over it, then they still mad. And now the friend is awkward because they can't now bring a significant other around you because they're still mad. So, it's very important. It's very important. And the primary thing is, like I said, somebody who is a friend to your relationship, who values and respects your relationship, because they essentially, if they know that it's important to you, then they're not so inclined to sit back and watch you jack it up behind something stupid.
See, I like that because I did have friends that were like friends of me and fans of me, and I can see how that caused some problems. But I know I got one in particular who was a fan of the relationships, and they just be like, oh, but it's kind of hard because she be like, I love love, so everything is lovey dovey with her. Like, they were out to like 6 o'clock in the morning and they just came home, but it's okay. They probably picking you flowers. I'm like, that ain't the same. But anyway, that's her.
Yeah,
that's her.
Maybe I don't know. Because I don't know about the kicking flowers at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, she be like extra with it. But I want to circle back to what we talked about. So again, we said that the caregiver and parents, establish these attachment styles. But your research has found out that it can actually be modified and changed based.
It can be changed.
So how does that work? Let's talk about that.
So let's say, for example, you have somebody whose attachment was secure. Their attachment style was secure, but they found themselves in relationships with people who might, you know, just in terms of how stuff is looking a whole lot in our relationships now, who end up not meeting their needs or not caring about what their needs are, or, you know, people who will just flat out lie, or, you know, one day they're here and the next day they flee. You don't know what's going on. So in terms of the expectations that they developed during their childhood or their caregiving experience, their current experience challenges what their expectations are based on what they have experienced most recently. So if in partnership, you find people to not be reliable, you find that your needs and the things that matter to you are not being considered, or people, you know, are not able to actually work through disagreements and conflict, but they blow up, you know, attack you and then run off or whatever, then it will give you reason to at some point have some pause about what you should expect. Or like, I don't know about these people. I'm not so secure anymore because what I expected has not been my experience. So yeah, it definitely can change if you have enough toxic relationships. It can shift.
So, I mean, if you've already established yourself of knowing what your attachment style is, mm-hmm. do you think it's beneficial to you know, maybe take the quiz or even if you're in therapy, you know, work with your therapist to mm-hmm. assess if that has shifted, if mm-hmm. migrated to, because again, that'll be helpful to communicate better, because you because mm-hmm. otherwise you'd be operating with a old operations manual. Mm-hmm. And you got like an updated one now because you didn't shift it. So I guess that's important to kind of keep an eye on that, right?
Yeah, it is, especially if you find that you are more reluctant to engage in relationships, and you know, you have concerns, or you find yourself being more suspicious of people and things like that that weren't necessarily the case before. You can kind of create more of, and people might be looking at it like, oh, I'm just being a bit more cautious and, you know, trying to protect myself. But sometimes if it gets to a point where there might not be reasons for you to feel like you need to protect yourself, then that absolutely could be an indication of a shift. And I'm telling you, the absolute best things that you can get out of the therapy relationship outside from being completely healed is insight about who you are, how you operate, how you see, understand, and relate to the world. So you're clear about why you show up the way you do. And it gives you enough awareness of yourself for you to be able to pause before you make automatic decisions. Mm-hmm. And you can decide, okay, whether or not what I'm thinking or what I would automatically do is going to be a good thing or if it's going to be a bad thing. So you can pivot the way that you need to based on what the circumstances look like. So you become the person who is the best expert on your internal working model stuff. Why do you operate the way that you operate? How you see the world? All of those kind of things. So you can, like I said, make the adjustments you need to make.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. what I hear you saying is that I need to get back into therapy. Okay, cool. Yeah. I'm gonna clear out some schedule and some time this week to start looking for another therapist. If you know people out here,
I do know a couple people. Yeah, okay, I do know a couple people.
I'll text you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, text all right. You. Yeah, that'll work.
That'll work. I love it. Okay. Dr. Yeah. J. Moody, help me out. Help mm-hmm. help us all out. Mm-hmm. Okay. How do we keep harmony in our relationships if we got I guess it really don't matter, because if you had two people that had anxious styles, it'd still be some problems. So how do you create harmony with differing or similar relationship mm-hmm. styles? What do you do to keep that relationship mm-hmm. smooth?
Okay. First of all, we have to understand that it's two people in it. So there's only so much that you can do. Now, if you are really, really invested in understanding the why behind the what, and that's essentially when your partner does something that has the potential to be disruptive or harmful, and you are capable of not blowing up at the what happened, but understanding why it happened, then you can approach it in a different way. Not to say that you should let them off the hook, but you can have, as opposed to feeling like they were intentional in violating you, you can have a conversation about what happened, how you experienced that, and perhaps talk to them about why is it they decided that that's what they needed to do. And sometimes, honestly, when people, especially people who trust you, who trust your and value your opinion of them, and you don't have a history of having, you know, gaslighting or, you know, blowing smoke up their behind and nothing, then when they actually start talking about or exploring reasons why they're showing up the way that they're showing up, sometimes when people hear themselves talking, then they start asking questions like, oh, truth be told, I don't know. And they start hearing themselves, and it kind of opens the window for them to start investigating some of the ways that they're showing up. And one of the best ways to create a safe place for people to have a conversation about their stuff is not responding or reacting, not reacting out of emotional. You said such and such, a lot of that lesson. So like, well, hey, why are you yelling? I'm trying to understand what we are fighting for. What's the fight about? Why do you want to fight? And as opposed to escalate an issue that's not really an issue for real, you create the opportunity for them to be able to come down. Now, whether or not they're going to come down immediately, maybe not. But what you don't want to do is meet the fire with some new fire, because then it's an explosion.
Yeah.
But, you know, some level of compassion and understanding. And then, but, you know, you still have to hold people accountable for the way that they treat you, because essentially, their stuff does not make it okay for them to harm you in the context of a relationship that you're supposed to feel safe in. So they need to understand how you experience that, what the impact of it is. But, you know, I'm not going to villainize you for that, but I just need to understand why you felt like that was okay, or if that was what you needed to do, because this is what I experienced from you. And if it was that the goal, like, what's going on? You know, to be able to have a conversation about the stuff that's actually happening, as opposed to the conflict that we often get when people pop off or, you know, crazy stuff starts happening. And all you know is I'm injured and you feel violated and respond from that place. That's not going to be helpful.
Yeah, it's responding, responding mm-hmm. from a place of hurt. And mm-hmm. I think that makes a lot of sense, because I don't know how you feel about the zodiac, but I'm a Taurus, and I know for mm-hmm. me. Some people say that we're stubborn. I say that we're determined, you know, I think the main thing for me is that I know when I get upset, like mm-hmm. I am like I'm hot and I'm mad for a long time. It takes a while to calm me down, mm-hmm. which is why I have all these little mechanisms to keep the laughter going. Let me sit there, mm-hmm. make a little joke. Let me sit there and walk away. Let me take some, anything to keep me from reaching critical mass. And mm-hmm. so if there's an argument that's heated and I feel myself creeping up, let me like not say nothing right now. Let me just walk away. So I think I do a good job at the part of not meeting fire with fire.
Mm-hmm.
I think my problem is, now that you just mentioned that, my problem is, but make sure that you hold people accountable for their actions. Mm-hmm. I think I may tend to, in my people pleasing ways, like mm-hmm. maybe I might just, you know, I just calm down. Let me try to keep the peace. I ain't gonna say mm-hmm. nothing. And what ultimately ends up happening is that it all builds up and it keeps happening. And then, you know, Jared, you know, Mount Vesuvius, Jared erupts and then bloom, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's ash and fall on everybody. I guess that's the piece that I probably need to work on. Like, hey, once I am calm, mm-hmm. now let's have a conversation where I'm like, hey, when you said this mm-hmm. this bothered me. Hey, when you hug up in my face, even mm-hmm. though that's a huge pet peeve of mine, mm-hmm. instead of me meeting fire with fire and calling back and being like, you know, cussing you out,
yeah.
I calm down. Like, hey, I don't really like it when you hang up the phone in my face. I feel like mm-hmm. it's like spitting in my face, you know, and it's mm-hmm. mad disrespectful. So mm-hmm. can you not do that? So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the piece that I need to work on that I hear you talking about. So, you know, you even now, all these years later, you still helping me. You know, you still.
Well, that's what I'm in the mix for. That's what I'm in. That is what I'm in. I see. And it's. I will say, sometimes there is a double-edged sword, because you can see things and you can see how, even from an objective distance, how they can be better, or what are the working mechanisms behind how people are operating, and recognizing that, Janice, you can't fix everybody's everything. And they just be like, oh, if you would just, and why would you say, oh, that's not going to do it. That's not going to do it. It's going to be another fight. Watch what's going to happen. And not being able to fix it or help people to navigate those processes. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is there are so many of us who are, we feel like life is happening to us and we're kind of not taking control of the things that we can take control of that'll help us to have a better quality of life. And it's like, well, if you would just stop and pay attention for a minute, sometimes, you know, we need to examine our core beliefs about how the world works, about people, about how we approach relationships and all the rest of the extracurricular stuff so that we can really get down to the bottom of how much of where I am in my life, am I satisfied with? And B, how much of it am I responsible for having created? And C, is there anything that I can do differently in order for me to turn that thing around? Mm. And a lot of people have a difficult time being able to really do some self-examination and see what part they're playing and kind of, you know, recreate. Because we have a tendency to create cycles. And you have the same relationship with 3-4 different people. And you look around like, what in the hell? Just why I keep meeting the same person?
Your common denominator is me. Yes, yes. Talk that talk. Talk that talk.
Yeah.
You spitting.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying. I see it a lot of times. Like, wow, y'all coming for y'all defensive. Y'all, this is not a conversation. Y'all being real passive. It's a passive aggressive fight. And the issue y'all need to address is not even being acknowledged, no less. Touched, addressed. You're not doing anything to fix the issue. Just fighting
for no reason.
Just fighting. And then nothing comes from the fighting because then you distance and whatever the issue was is still sitting on the table when you come back.
Right. So then y'all do make up. It's still, you didn't address the main thing. So it could happen again.
Yeah. It's likely to be something stupid to pop it right back up. Mm-hmm.
Or help us out, because we're at the last segment of the show. It's called It's About Damn Time. And this is where I might get to sit there and kind of pop off and let the people know what they need to do. So, Dr. Janice Moody, what is it about damn time for people to start doing to really embrace learning about their attachment style and helping them navigate through their relationships?
Mm-hmm. The first thing is self-awareness. You have to be aware of what your beliefs are, what your expectations are. Look into your history. I mean, what was your experience of your parents or your caregivers? What do you expect from your partners? How do you show up in relationships right now? And, you know, what are your expectations of the partners or the people that you intend to partner with so that you can kind of do your own homework? And find out how much of what you experience from the people that you attach to, you're responsible for creating. And, you know, you can do some examination and ask some questions about some of the things, especially from relationships that went wrong. What are some of the things that I did that didn't necessarily work out that I might be able to do differently? And I always feel like, you know, like I said, I'm a proponent for therapy because it helps us to get an objective perspective of what we're doing, why we're operating in those particular ways, such that we can do a better job of being able to communicate what our needs are and not trying to, you know, people say or do stuff in ways that might be intended to manipulate a specific outcome. I'm going to do this so that she can do that. Yeah. So she can know that that doesn't work. And it's not rooted in authenticity. So if the thing is, you are not really capable of being able to express emotions and you have the committee in your head that's telling you what you need to do or misinterpreting all of your experiences, then you'll continue to show up in ways that are not going to get your needs met. You might not even know what your needs are in the context of a relationship, but that's some stuff you need to find out, because ultimately, if you communicate what you need, you communicate what works and what doesn't work for you, what you do is create the opportunity for somebody else to show up. And if you literally giving them instructions and they decide not to meet whatever the need is, or they decline, then that ought to tell you how much they value who you are. Like, well, okay, what you need, well, that gives you the opportunity for you to determine if whether or not that's somebody that you want to continue to make space for, because they've essentially told you, as opposed to sometimes we ultimatums and, you know, that kind of stuff. Give people an opportunity. First of all, pay attention to who they are. because patterns have a tendency to give us information. And when you say what you need and they seem like they're not interested, then take them at their word. And if you continue to experience them in such a way where you feel like I'm pulling for the stuff that I need, then your decision to stay in that relationship makes you more responsible for your experience than theirs. So the first thing is being aware of yourself. Because then when you know what your tendencies are, what it is that you need, how you have a tendency to respond, oh, this right here is a trigger for me, I can't manage that, then you know how you need to navigate things with other people. Because you can't change nobody else.
You
can't change nobody else. So you have to take responsibility for yourself in relationships. You have to take responsibility for being able to understand what you're feeling and be clear about the reasons why, so you can communicate that, communicate what your needs are, because you can't change anybody else. You can't change anybody else. So, and when the stuff doesn't work, you got to set boundaries too and hold people accountable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we essentially teach people how to train us. But if you don't know what you need, then how you gonna
that part. And maybe you can learn what you need by going to see a therapist or a licensed clinical psychologist such as yourself. So since we're here, I mean, it's the opportunity for you to promote all your stuff and all the great things that you go ahead and let everybody know if they want more of this, like this mental health Monday stuff that you be doing, or everything, or all the other content, or all the speaking engagements that you be doing. Let them know where they can find you at. No.
Okay, so the primary stuff is you can follow me at Dr. Janice Moody. That is DrJanisMoody. On Instagram, you can follow me at Dr. Janice Moody on Facebook. That's where the majority of this kind of material shows up. And hey, this is what I'm doing, y'all, stuff shows up. And if you want additional information about psychological services, therapy, other stuff that I might have going on, then you can check my website at www.drjanismoody.com. That's drjanismoody.com. And if you're interested in a consultation because you're looking for services, there's an array of services that I provide, then guess what? You can get a free 15-minute consultation to just kind of see what's going on and what you might need, how I might be able to help you. Just go to the website and request an appointment. No money down.
Hey, we love it. Give me a high 15. See, I was just talking about this with somebody else, like where talking to someone in a mental health professional, can they set up like 15 minutes so you can kind of see where y'all be a right fit for each other, instead of just being like, all right, I'm about to book this appointment, and then I sit there for like an hour and halfway in the middle of the session, I'm like, this is not gonna work. We are not vibing. But so the fact that you do that, see, that's why you a real one. That's why you're a real one. I'm so glad that I know you.
Yeah. I encourage it. You got to be your own advocate. Not every therapist is the same. And I'm a little different. I'm going to show up and I'm going to be Janice. I'm a doctor, but I'm going to show up and be Janice. And my goal is for my clients to have an opportunity to at least get a feel for who I am before they have to spend their money. So come and see if I might work. And if I don't, then that's fine. Then, you know, before you actually make a confirmation. But I encourage everybody to do that. Mm-hmm. If you have an opportunity to call and ask people if you can have a consultation with them, so you can see if they're a good fit, especially for people who belong to minority populations or marginalized populations, because not everybody is culturally competent or culturally responsive.
You better talk that talk. That's for damn.
Yeah, they might not be able to give you what you need. So yeah,
that is for damn. So Janice, thank you so much for being here.
You are welcome.
And you will be back. I'll just let you know now. I'll let you know now. You will be back. Thank you for joining me this week on It's About Damn Time. Hey, if you like what you heard, follow this podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and IG, and join the conversation on this week's episode. Link to all my socials in the show notes. You can also show love by simply giving me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And of course, for more blogs, pods, and other digital content, go to thewholedamnshow.com. Until next time, I'll see you next week.